That's okay.
Great. So, as Becca said, I'm Kelly Horton, and I am a dietitian. And I don't have any financial disclosures. That slides at the end of the presentation, but I don't have any financial disclosures. And the talk that I'm presenting and my views are not the views of the. I don't represent ADA, but I am a dietitian, so I just want to make sure that's clear. So if there's any reporters out there, I'm not the ADA. And there's a typo in the title, but I'm going to talk about supporting health and the environment as really from the lens of a nutrition professional, but you could apply this to nurses or doctors, to anybody, but this is just my area of expertise. And to talk about that, so right now I'm at the National Council on Aging in our Center for Healthy Aging, but prior to coming to the National Council on Aging, I was a food systems and environmental nutrition consultant in Seattle working with a lot of the folks that David mentioned, so I was really excited to see them come up. And it's exciting to see a lot of colleagues in the audience that I don't get to see so much anymore because of my new job. So, and while we were working on the principles, I was a health and aging policy fellow. The first part of my fellowship was as a member of the Farm to School team at USDA, and then I was also on the Hill working with Congresswoman Slaughter on environmental health policy. So this topic is very near and dear to me. So, but it also ties into my work in, I don't know the woman's name who asked the question about how to make it really tactile and apply to people's daily work as a health professional. I now work at the National Council on Aging, and our goal is to improve the lives of millions of older adults, especially those vulnerable and disadvantaged. And before I was hired at the National Council, there's no dietitian, no nutritionist in our Center for Healthy Aging. We do have interns who float in and out from nutrition schools and from nursing schools, but nobody really there from the lens of food security. And so it's really interesting to now be there and to think about how all this stuff applies within my new workplace. And we're really focused on health and also economic security, which the food systems principles also is focused on as well. So the main learning objectives for my piece of today's session is to really understand how the food system contributes to chronic disease and other conditions, and those are some of the things that I'm starting to integrate in my own work for folks that I work with. And then to also identify some resources, especially focus on the role of dietetics and nutrition health professionals. But again, these resources that I'm going to mention really could be the boilerplate starting piece if any of you are interested in food systems or you're talking to somebody that they just don't understand what it's all about. These are really great pieces, and some of the things I'll talk about are health professional pieces, and others are just things that you could even talk to clients about and they might be interested in too. And then I'll talk about the American Dietetic Association's resources, and actually that'll be throughout the presentation, explaining sustainable food systems, and then also go through what are some actions that healthcare professionals, sort of building on what Holly has already talked about, that we can do to incorporate the principles into our practice. So I put this cartoon in here, and he's saying, honest doc, if I had known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. And I think a lot of people are thinking this way, but not really understanding how it connects to everything we do every day. And healthcare professionals really get that, environmentalists really get that, and the principles really bring together those fields together. So I was also a past chair of the American Dietetic Association's Hunger and Environmental Nutrition group, and some of my colleagues put together this definition of sustainable food system, which was looked at as a component of the principles that we put together. And the definition from the HEN perspective is what the acronym for the group is: when production, processing, distribution, and consumption are integrated, related practices that regenerate rather than degrade natural resources. They're socially just, accessible, and support the development of local communities and economies. And so there's all these different components, and we all work in various silos that touch each of these components. And I think the great thing about the principles is that they bring all these silos together. So here's the silos I'm talking about. We have people working in human health, working for social equity. We have people working on economic equity, and then we have environmental health. And in order to be sustainable health-wise and food system-wise, those are all going to come together, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So Brandon Bourne from the University of Washington's Department of Urban Planning put together this really simplistic model, which I just love and have referred to for a couple of years. Really, the food system is impacting lots and lots of issues. And there's a great video from the Kellogg Foundation asking people, what is a food system? And they have no idea. They're like, I don't know, I go to the grocery store. Isn't that the food system? Or I go to the little bodega in my neighborhood, or I go to the farmer's market. Everybody has this different idea, what's the food system? It's kind of like you ask people what the dietary guidelines are, and they look at you like, well, I know I need protein. So it's the same thing, but it's a lot more confusing. But the food system, the way we eat and what we eat and how it's produced, really affects us and impacts a lot of different things. So there's the issue of poverty. What can you afford? What can't you afford to eat? There's community development issues, and are we able to plan a community garden or not? Transportation issues. Can you access the food? Can food come into your community? There's a local economy, environmental issues, land use issues. In King County, when we were looking at the food policy council and looking at working with the local government, and we were looking at all this land that was just beautiful, could be used for food production, but it was all for horses and not able to be coated and or not coated, but not able to be reused for production of land. And it was owned by people who had a lot of money who weren't interested in selling. So there's a lot of issues around there. And then emergency preparedness, same thing. When we were working on this, we had a lot of flooding in southwestern Washington. And there were huge E. coli issues with the water supply getting into the food supply in those communities and nobody being aware of that for 3 days. And then public health, of course, we're here at the Public Health Association's conference. There's huge issues of public health related to the food system. So I just want to back up a little bit. And when we go through dietetics education, we rarely learn about food systems. We learn about the medical system. My education is slightly different because it depends also where you are educated and where you choose to do your internship. And where I did my internship, people really focused on policy or focused on farming. They were interested in this stuff. But other folks, and the majority of dietetics professionals, wouldn't get any of this. This is news. And I would say that's really been changing over the last 5 years, which is awesome. But it needs to change quite a bit more. So when I'm talking with dietetics professionals, and this can apply to all the fields, and what we do is focus on what is the food system, and the first thing is production. So there's farming, there's gardening, fisheries, wild foods, and then there's transformation. So you're producing the food, but then how do we actually get it to be edible food? That's kind of an interesting question for someone who does a lot of home gardening. I just pick it and eat it. But a lot of us don't do that. We go to the grocery store, and there's a lot of steps to getting it there. So there's the processing, the packaging, the labeling, the marketing. Then there's the distribution from wholesale, warehousing, transportation issues, and then access. So the retail stores, the food safety nets, such as the food banks, and then the consumption. And this is where most of us as health professionals are dealing with. It's the consumption and the results of the consumption. So the purchasing, the preparing, the eating, waste management. In my job right now, we are really focused on access. Do people have money to purchase food? And then the food that they purchase, can they actually prepare it? A lot of the seniors in this country don't have access to a stove or to a microwave or certain pots and pans and things like that, or they have arthritis and they can't cook those foods. So those are some of the issues around the food system. Now, this was created by Alison Harmon and Angie Tagto, two dietitians, and they really looked at what's the inputs into the food system, what's the influences on the food system, and then what are the impacts. And most health professionals are really focused on that top tier of the pyramid. They chose a pyramid. I don't know if they did that on purpose, but it was when the food pyramid was out, so dietitians really get the pyramid structure. But really, that small piece was the outcomes, and when you really start to dig deeper, there's all these other influences that a lot of people don't understand. So the first thing, you know, looking at the bottom is natural resources, genetic resources, soil, land, air, water, and energy. Dietetics professionals, most health professionals, we don't know anything about this. And then there's the human resources, the laborers, the managers, the professionals. How is your food getting to you? Is it getting to you in an ethically produced way? A lot of people really care about that, but there's nothing on the label to tell you whether or not that's happening. And then some of the influences on what's available. There's research and technology. There's a lot of things we just don't know about the food that's being produced. There's education, there's policy, economics, and social values. So all of those things are influencing that top circle that I was telling you about. And then those things are really impacting our health. And what we're talking about with the food system principles is creating transparency, so people can understand more what's influencing the food and how it gets to your plate. And professionally, that's what I'm very concerned about. What we grow, how we grow it, how does that impact our health as we age? So not to pick on corn, David talked about corn a little bit, but I just chose it as one example because it is a very good example. It's one of the largest crops in the U.S. Half of all farm acres are corn. We don't need to get into the GMO discussion around that. It's corn. It's tax subsidized through the Farm Bill. So our public policy is aiding and abetting us producing corn. And 80% of the corn that we produce is fed to animals. So again, that's influencing the meat that's available to folks. And we're basically converting that soy and corn to oil, meat, starch, and high fructose corn syrup. And that's going into enabling a lot of processed and fast foods to be available. So there's a lot of foods, if you go into the supermarket and go into the spaghetti sauce aisle, pick that up, you'll be surprised there's high fructose corn syrup in tomato sauce. It's in a lot of foods like that. So that's a lot of added sugar. And what that is leading to is a rise in a lot of different chronic diseases. And again, just maybe one example, type 2 diabetes. So a third of U.S. kids are overweight and obese. David and Holly showed some striking pictures. I remember living overseas for a couple years. I came back and landed into the Detroit airport and called my mother just shocked. I was like, everybody's fat. And my mom was like, duh, it's America, you know. But it's not like that everywhere, although it is becoming more and more so, which is really scary. And the healthcare system is not prepared to deal with this in our country. Definitely not prepared in China or in India. And we're in big trouble. One out of three babies born in 2008 will develop diabetes. Many of those will develop that in adolescence. And if the trends continue, we are seeing the first generation having shorter life expectancy than their parents. And it's becoming the norm. So when parents look at their children and they look at a whole classroom full of children all the same size, people forget that that's not normal. And then what we're seeing with older adults is it's playing out in multiple chronic health conditions. So as we age, we're seeing more and more chronic health conditions. When I was managing a nutrition department in Seattle, Washington, we did a study of Medicaid recipients, and our clients had between 4 and 11 chronic conditions. And trying to manage those people and tell them what to eat, what not to eat, trying to manage their multiple medications, which interact with their food, it's disaster waiting to happen. Right now, 1 in 15 children has multiple chronic conditions. So that's heart disease, hypertension, we're seeing those in children, diabetes, obesity, arthritis. Almost 1 in 3 out of 4 people, or 3 in 4 people over 65 and older have multiple chronic conditions. So while this isn't directly related to the food system, there's a lot of other issues playing here too, sedentary lifestyles and things like that. The food system is a major player in this issue. And it's totally disconnected from the public policy people who play in this field, which is CMS and HHS. CDC is more involved, but CMS, they don't really talk about food system at all. What does this stand for? Oh, sorry, Center for Medicaid and Medicare. Services. Thank you. So chronic disease, it's an epidemic. More than 1.7 million people in the U.S. die of chronic disease every year. 80% of older adults have at least one chronic condition. That's actually up now. It's 91%, and 73% have at least two. And 95% of healthcare spending goes to those chronic conditions. And just as somebody who's in the nutrition field, I just see this connection, that it has to do a large amount, and I don't know the percentage, and nobody's really studied that, but it does have to do with what we're eating, what we're consuming. Oops, I went backwards. So we have these rising costs of healthcare. We also have a lot of issues having to do not just with weight, but mental health disorders, depression. Those are also tied to what we eat and our sedentary lifestyles. And another issue that has to that is important to think about here is that one in four people with chronic conditions can't afford the health care. They can't afford getting all their medications. So like that client that I had that had 11 chronic conditions, I think there was 43 medications, which she shouldn't have had 43 medications, but that's because nobody was talking to each other. All her doctors were independent of each other. And it was the dietitian who made all the connections. So the food system really is connected to a lot of these things, and if we can look at the root rather than the downstream, and that I think that's been really then the focus of a lot of the Hunger and Environmental Nutrition Group is to get the health professional to look beyond the downstream, but what's upstream? What has influenced this? And how, as a health professional, you can get at the table and start to talk about the things that are influencing our jobs on a day-to-day basis. I'm just going to skip through some of this. Okay, so I'm going to talk about health professional roles and what we can do as individuals within our professional practice. So again, this was created for and by dietetics professionals, but I think you could insert nurses or doctors here as well. In this other part of the pyramid, we now have the nutrition and food professionals making the connections between how food is produced and how it's processed, and then how does it get to your table, to influence policymakers, influence people who are educating folks about their food, influence researchers, and then ultimately influence consumers and what they're purchasing. But again, we can influence consumers as much as we want, but we need that food to be available for them as well. And we need, as I think David was talking about, livable wages to purchase really good food and healthy food. So how as individuals do we play a role? There's I get a lot of questions from clinical dietitians who say, what can I do about it? I work in a hospital, and I'll talk about that. Food service managers also play a role, dietetics educators. And then there are dietitians, there's health practitioners who work within industry, the food industry, or within the farming industry, who can also play a role. And then public health, community nutrition folks, and then public policy makers. So Jennifer Wilkins actually developed what's called the concept of civic dietetics. Has anybody heard about this before? A couple people. Great. Of course you've heard about it, right? So civic dietetics is really the promotion through dietetic practice and community, education, research, consulting, and clinical nutrition of a sustainable, just, economically viable, and community-based food system. And what we're really focusing on here is that every single person within a community should understand where their food is coming from, and the dietetics professional, it could be the conduit to help understand that, same as the nursing professional or the doctor. And what we're trying to get dietetics professionals to do is to evaluate food based on their contributions to health and sustainability, and to also assess the food and agricultural system, and basically to get to know it better, because a lot of us, like I said in the beginning, don't really understand it. So some of the career paths that the dietitians who are interested in this are doing include clinical dietitians and hospital food service managers, particularly those linked to healthcare without harm. They're doing some wonderful work on how to get sustainable food into the cafeterias in the hospitals. When I first started becoming familiar with their work, I would hear a lot from folks in this group that the dietitians would be at the table with the hospital administrators, and nobody would ask them what the food system should look like in the hospital, and they wouldn't speak up. So a lot of the work was around, okay, you need to speak up, and here's how you do it, and here's how you talk to somebody who's like three levels above you in management and tell them the importance of this, and really just getting over that fear of my place in the hospital and not really speaking up. And then there's also dietitians working in community, and they're working on community gardens, farmers markets, food banks. A lot of food banks are now becoming savvy and saying, we want healthy, fresher foods. These are the types of foods we won't accept. People are donating foods. We won't accept this. Please give us this type of food. You'll see in the holiday giving, a lot of the food banks will send out flyers of, please send these types of food. If you're looking for an example of that, the Boston Food Bank actually has a really great depiction of a grocery bag and the types of foods that they would accept on their website. And then there's the Farm to School WIC, which is the Women's, Infants, and Children Supplemental Assistance Program, and then SNAP, which used to be called food stamps. Again, getting people more access to fresh fruits and vegetables and locally grown fresh fruits and vegetables. There's health professionals working as journalists and professional speakers who are talking about this and trying to break down the silos and to get people to understand how they can influence the food system. culinary instructors. I think Sam Cass at the White House kind of blew this out of the water, so most of the public knows about that. Then there's farmers and gardeners who are really reaching out and helping people from primary school level all the way through college understand how food is grown. There's a lot of bloggers out there getting information out. These are some of the ones that I would consider really good sources. There are some out there that are not, and you have to use your discretion to figure that out. The American Dietetic Association has some great folks working on public policy and communications. And then they have Susan Roberts, who is actually focused, she's a member, and she's focused on law, and she's a dietitian. So there's some great interplay there. And then there's a lot of activists as well working on this. Some ways that we can get involved individually is learn about the benefits of sustainably produced foods. The Hunger Environmental Nutrition Group actually has organic food, I think it's talking points on the website, so you can learn about the science. And there is science around organic foods, and then there's also some things that haven't been proven. So they have a really great resource on there that's helpful. We've seen the sprinkling of food policy councils around the country, and it's important for health professionals, regardless of what your health background is, to be at the table of those. There's urban planners, there's farmers, there's agricultural economists, there's everybody's at those tables, but if the health professional is missing, that's a big, huge piece. Partnering with local farmers, understanding what they do, and then becoming involved in farm to institution. That's been a very big thing. Farm to food bank, farm to school, farm to hospital, long-term care facilities, farm to prisons. Some of the resources, and I think you can download the presentation from online. So there's a few resources here. The Sustainable Food Systems Premier, which David mentioned, the Organic Talking Points. The Journal of Hunger and Environmental Nutrition, as David mentioned, the Premier edition is still available. And there's actually some other ones. You do have to pay for the journal, but there are, I think, three or four editions that are focused on this sort of education that are free to the public. And you can download those, and they're very helpful. Angie Tagto, if you Google her name, she's an independent environmental nutrition consultant. She has a great website, which includes at the bottom of the list the Good Food Checklist for Families. And this is something that I've used with clients. You can give it to them, and it teaches them how to make choices within their own budget. And then I listed here the Sustainable Food Dining Guide for the Food Nutrition Conference and Expo that ADA has every year. The Hen Group produced a sustainable dining guide in Denver and Chicago and a couple other places. And I just put that here because if you're going to a conference such as one in DC, you can now look on, there's a proliferation of websites, and you can go on and on Google and just do sustainable food dining DC and come up with some options. Unfortunately, none of them are in this neighborhood, Holly. So you do have to take a cab to get to them. And then these are resources not just for health professionals, but for the general public. Omnivore's Dilemma. A lot of people have read this, and I would just say, you know, as a dietitian, I had a lot of clients who had read this, and if I hadn't read it, I wouldn't even, you know, I needed to read it because they were coming in and asking questions about certain chapters in his book. And then Animal Vegetable Miracle is a really great book. If you're a visual learner, these are some really great films that talk about the food system and why it's important. And I think Holly mentioned, did you mention, or David mentioned Congress? Maybe you mentioned Congress. And everything, even though it's a system, it's very highly complex and complicated. We each vote every time we purchase something. So you're voting with the food company if you purchase something. But you can also advocate to Congress and tell them a little bit about why you do what you do with the food that you eat. But don't forget that your dollar is your most important vote. So if we can just teach people to move over just a little bit with what they're purchasing and also make it easier, then we would have a much more sustainable food system.